Tonight was the AEW follow-up to WrestleDream on Saturday, where we crowned the new AEW world champion. His name is Jon Moxley. Brian Danielson's full-time career is over. It is no more. And they shot this big angle, very serious, major angle at the end of the show on Saturday, where Brian got his neck broken. All the AEW babyfaces, the AEW originals, the Young Guns, they ran in to try to help. Everybody got their ass kicked, and the Blackpool Combat Club retreated, and we were left with an image of Darby Allin and Daniel Garcia and Hook and Orange Cassidy, all of them just looking defeated. They were crestfallen by what they had just seen. They looked beaten and defeated. And the question now coming into tonight's show was, what does it all mean? Where is it all leading? Why did they put the AEW World Championship in a bag like they were stealing it? Who are they working for, right? They left you with more questions than answers, which is not necessarily a bad thing because you want people to tune into the television show to see what's coming next. So I was looking forward to this show tonight. I was looking forward to the follow-up for a lot of different reasons and a couple of the matches they had announced. And look, I understand. Stories take time to build. And right now, that's what AEW is trying to do. They're trying to build this story out wherever it's going to lead to. However long it's going to take to get there. They're building to something involving Jon Moxley and his crew. In some ways, it kind of reminds me of the old New Blood versus Millionaires angle from WCW in the dying days of WCW. And you know, it's not exactly the same thing, but you have, you know, on the one hand, a group of young, hungry guys looking to get ahead and looking to take down the faction that is trying to hold on to their spots. Only in this case, it's not so much about holding on to their spots, but if you listen to what Jon Moxley has been saying, he just doesn't like the way things are going in AEW. Yo, you don't say. But he doesn't like the way things are going. He doesn't like the fun and the games and the goofiness. But that's effectively what the story is. There was no Darby Allin on this show tonight. Excalibur said on commentary that they could not get a hold of him. Nobody's been able to talk to him since Saturday, so we don't know where Darby Allin was. But we know that Darby Allin was not there tonight. We know that Will Ospreay was not there tonight. There, obviously, Bryan Danielson. We're not going to see him for a while, so he wasn't there tonight either. What we were left with was the Dark Order and Top Flight and Action Andretti taking it to the Blackpool Combat Club. They were really angry that the Blackpool Combat Club kept kicking their asses. They were throwing out challenges like Jon Moxley. Ooh, he's going to be scared of Evil Uno and Alex Reynolds and John, whatever, Long John Silver and all these people. And so now we're in this mode where, because they're building this story, we're kind of at the bottom floor of the building. If you want to look at it like a skyscraper, right? We're only on floor one. The elevator hasn't even gone up yet. And so we have to wait now and watch the Blackpool Combat Club run through a bunch of low card, I can't even say mid card, lower mid card talents that have not been built up, that people do not largely give a shit about. They have not been positioned as terribly important on any of these shows. So it's kind of hard for me as a viewer to sit here and really give a shit when you have Evil Uno cutting an angry promo telling Jon Moxley that he's not going to stand by and watch him and the BCC take over AEW. They're going to stand in the way of the Blackpool Combat Club. I'm sure that Jon Moxley and his crew are just shaking in their boots that the Dark Order is threatening them and telling them, you're not taking this company away from us. But that's what we had on the show tonight. Feels like it's going to be a while before we get any real meat on the bone here. We didn't get a whole lot of answers to the questions that we had either. It was just sort of this continuation from what we saw at the end of the show on Saturday without any significant follow-up whatsoever. And that was the biggest disappointment coming out of WrestleDream. There was a little twist involving the Elite, which I'll get to as far as what the Elite's role in this may or may not be, because we saw them observing all of the chaos that was unfolding, and they didn't do a whole hell of a lot to put an end to it. What does that mean? I mean, it can mean any number of things. I had a thought. There was a thought that occurred to me, and I hope to God I'm wrong. I'll tell you what that is when we get to that part of the show. But yeah, if anybody was waiting as I was and hoping that we might get some sort of significant follow-up to what we saw on Saturday, then you were left disappointed. One thing that did not disappoint was the debut of Shelton Benjamin, who made his in-ring AEW debut tonight against Lio Rush. I thought that Shelton Benjamin looked fucking fantastic out there. And I thought that his debut was exactly what it needed to be. I had one critique. If there was one thing about it I could change, I will let you know what that is. But on the whole, I thought it was a very strong debut to set him up for an upcoming match in a couple of weeks he's going to be having on TV against Swerve Strickland. That was honestly one of the aspects of the show, one of the few aspects of the show that I actually really enjoyed was the Shelton Benjamin debut. But then you go from that, and that's why when I look at this show tonight, it's very up and down. You know, there were a couple things that I liked, and then there were a bunch of things that I didn't care for. And this is coming out of WrestleDream, where you would hope, you know, you would hope that they have something to draw you in and really, you know, grab you and grab your interest. And I just wasn't feeling that on this show tonight. You have Mariah May, who just got done defending her AEW Women's World Championship at WrestleDream against Willow Nightingale. And they actually had a really good match. But I was also asking the question of, where are we going here with Mariah May? I mean, are they building to a rematch with Toni Storm? I don't see the point in doing that. Their story has been told. There's no reason to go back to that. So let's put her on the side for a second. Were they building to something maybe with her and Britt Baker before Britt Baker got sick with strep throat? Maybe yes, I don't know. Where's Jamie Hayter? Jamie Hayter came back, all this fanfare. I mean, they put her on the pre-show, but all this fanfare at Wembley Stadium. I was so happy to see Jamie Hayter back. Where was she tonight? Last we saw of her, she was on Dynamite last week being attacked by Penelope Ford, who hasn't been on television in 2 years. Sure doesn't look like Jamie Hayter is being built for anything in the near future. So you have Mariah May backstage in a segment tonight, going off in a promo on the company and Christopher Daniels, and do you not have any competition for me? And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, boy, there's a lot of shoot in this promo, whether it was intended or not. I'm thinking the same thing. Do you not have anything for your women's world champion? Don't be like the people at the media scrum on Saturday when they had, it was question time and nobody had any fucking questions for the women's world champion, which was completely embarrassing. It's not just the people at the media scrum though, it's the company itself. What are we doing here? What about the stuff with Mina? What, again, we could go through any number of names that are on the roster, but it just feels she's completely listless and directionless since she won that championship. So that's another example of just, I don't know what they're doing. You look at the Callis family. Don Callis comes out with his family tonight. His family looked a little bit different. He had two new members of his family. One of those members we know about because we saw Lance Archer get traded away last week by Jake the Snake Roberts, who, by the way, the week after, they told us that Jake struck a deal with Don Callis to trade Lance Archer for LFI, right? He came out later when Roosh was out there in the ring with Dralistico and the Beast Mortos, and they were in the ring, and Jake's on the stage, and he pumps the fist, right? No Jake the Snake Roberts on the show tonight. But we saw this last week. Okay, Lance Archer now is with Don Callis, but there's Brian Cage, the new Ring of Honor television champion, coming down to the ring as well. When did this happen? Apparently, Brian Cage is part of the Callis family now. Okay. He wants to go after the tag team titles. That's the explanation. I guess they struck a deal off camera. We'll just have to take his word for it. I don't know. What that means for Will Hobbs, I have no idea, because Will Hobbs, I think, is about ready to come back from his injury, and he was part of the Callis family, right? Last time we saw him. What does that mean for Will Hobbs? Is he going to be part of the Callis family when we see him back on TV, or is that going to be forgotten about? Seems like they have enough members. Then we had the main event. Now, when I said before that coming into the show tonight, there were a couple of things I was looking forward to. One of those things was the debut of Shelton Benjamin in the ring with Lio Rush. And we got that. The other thing was they announced Christian Cage against Jay White. And I thought, you know what? That's a pretty cool match. I'm looking forward to that. So they gave those two the main event spot on the show tonight. And it was actually a very disappointing match in many ways, but there was a very embarrassing botch in the main event. And I don't know who was responsible for it. I think it's Kip Sabian. But there was supposed to be a run-in, and there was supposed to be a second run-in off the distraction from the first run-in, but they hit the ring a little early. And this is your main event here. And it was very noticeable right away that something got fucked up in here. And whoever's fault it was, especially to happen in the main event on the show, that was fucking embarrassing. I don't know how that happens. But what is clear from the main event tonight is that the Hangman Page Jay White feud is going to continue. Coming out of Wrestle Dream, where Jay White pinned Hangman Page, Hangman got a measure of revenge tonight by costing Jay White his match against Christian Cage. To say that tonight's show was a mixed bag would be quite the understatement. But as a follow-up to Wrestle Dream from Saturday, this was not a show that I was terribly enthusiastic about when it was over. And there's still a lot of very frustrating issues that this company has that need to be addressed. They seem to try to be taking a step as far as this main story is concerned. And again, I know we have to let the story play out. I want to see where the story goes. But it's just comical to me, you know, when I see what they're doing here with this. It's almost like an invasion type of angle, which sounds weird because Moxley and his crew are part of AEW, so it's not an invasion per se. But, you know, here's the dominant heel faction that's taking over. You work for us now, right? That's what Moxley said on the show tonight. And I just think back to similar angles that have been done in years past in other companies. And you want to think back to the NWO storyline. You want to think back to the invasion storyline in WWE. And when they needed Team WWF, right, to stand up for the company against the Alliance. And I just remember the days when you had Austin and you had The Undertaker and you had Kane standing up, Kurt Angle, right, standing up for Team WWF, Jericho, who at the time wasn't, you know, a fucking shell of himself. And I remember those days. And now I look at what we had on the show tonight. No Darby Allin, no Will Ospreay, so many names missing. But we have, again, the Dark Order, and we have Private Party is out there who just got made to look like scrubs, and we had Action Andretti, and I'm like, it's no wonder that people are not able to find it within themselves to buy into this and to get into this and get excited about this, because where is the army, right? You would hope at some point that they will pop up, but they seem to be building really around Daniel Garcia, and you've got, you know, people at that next level above the Top Flight and above the Action Andretti. And I'm still not sure people are going to buy into it. I don't know that it's going to work. But being that we have to sit through this, watching this tonight, it was just like, really? This is the force? This is the force that the BCC is supposed to be afraid of here? Again, I know we're on the first floor here of probably a five-floor building, but I mean, give me a fucking break. How is anybody supposed to get excited about that? This is your AEW Dynamite review. It is October 16th, 2024. I am the Solid Monster. Like and subscribe. We are getting dangerously close to 82,000 subscribers, hopefully in the next few days. So I thank you for that. Super chats are going to be opened up here in just, well, they're open now, but they're going to be popping up here in just a moment. So get them on in, and we will be reading all of your messages. I just want to let all of our channel members know. And I think we have 10 new ones. Thanks to our friend Retro KOH. Thank you for the gifted memberships. But a brand new members only Q&A part one just went up earlier today. It is on the channel if you are a member. It is over an hour long. And that's only part one. We got part two coming next week. So one of the perks of membership, go check out the Q&A answering your questions. You find it right now, or when we're done here, go check it out. So I just wanted to let everybody know that that is officially up. Dynamite comes on the air with footage of the Blackpool Combat Club leaving Wrestle Dream after John Moxley won the championship. And they're driving off in the back of a Dodge Ram pickup truck. Moxley said that he's the only one responsible. People think they know what motivates him. They know nothing. He has a dream about a land of opportunity. He said wrestling gave him an opportunity, and he wants that for the 150 other people that are under contract to this company. He hates what AEW has become. Egos out of control. Dancing, partying when there's no need for it. He will burn down the forest to build a new one. They will do what he has done in order for there to be a better future. If you don't want to come with, he said, run while you can, but get out of the way. What's the new paradigm? It's simple. You work for me now. They cut to a conflicted Wheeler Yuta, who was also sitting in the back of the pickup truck as they were all riding off together into the night. Moxley saying that you work for me now would seem to indicate that there is no, for lack of a better term, higher power involved here, that they are either answering to or that they are partnering with. That seems to be the case here. Maybe people are looking at it the wrong way. I still find it hard to believe that at the end of all this, there won't be some kind of a reveal of someone else being involved, or someone or some group of people being involved here. I still think that's where this ends up. It may take until World's End, you know, the end of the year, to get the payoff to this, but that's how it came off here, though, just based on what he was saying. Now, live in the arena, Adam Cole was out first to a big babyface reaction. For those who may have missed it, Adam Cole made his return at WrestleDream. He ran to the ring, and he chased off MJF, who also made his return. And so he's a babyface now. MJF is a heel, so Adam Cole is a babyface, just like that. And so tonight, it was going to be story time with Adam Cole. So he gets into the ring, and he mentions that Roderick Strong and the Kingdom, he told them that he has to do this on his own. Effectively putting the kibosh on this whole Undisputed Kingdom thing, which was fucking dead from day one. I mean, let's be honest. They officially killed it off here, but it's been dead for at least 6 months. What am I even talking about? 6 months. It's been dead for the entire year. It's October. It's been dead for 10 months. He called MJF the worst human being in the world. MJF will tell you that Cole broke a promise or a trust, but without trust, there's no foundation. Adam Cole might be a lot of things, but stupid is not one of them. Anyone who thinks that you can trust MJF is stupid. The MJF that we see now is the real one, the one who has terrorized this company for 5 years, despite saying that he cares about them. If he could describe MJF in one word, it would be fake. The two surgeries for the hair on his head is proof of this. He tells everybody in the arena to go on social media, go trash MJF on social media. And I guarantee you, you know, he projects in public like he doesn't care, but in reality, he'll be in his hotel room crying his eyes out if you go on social media and you say bad things about him. By the way, that's probably the case for a lot of people on social media, a lot of trolls on social media who have a lot of keyboard courage, and then you say one thing about them and they're probably fucking crying in the corner of the room up in the fetal position. So there's a lot of people like that in life. Said MJF is a phony who can't be trusted, and everybody in the back agrees with him. AEW has the best wrestlers in the world and guys who will be the future. And it makes him sick that these young guys look at him, and being MJF, and think that that's a path to success, despite it being a path of failure and loneliness. So he called him out. He wanted MJF to come out to the ring. So they play MJF's music. There's no MJF. They cut the music off, and then we see on the screen, there's MJF, but he's sitting at home. He's in a chair. He's sipping some wine by a fireplace. Said there's a lot of jackals in pro wrestling when you're at the top, so they can chew you up and spit you out. Something that MJF promised would never happen again. Until Adam Cole came into his life. Cole stabbed him in the back and left a void that will never let MJF trust again. It's not his fault that he's like this. It's Adam Cole's. And MJF says he knows Cole wants revenge, but it's not ever going to happen. So he'll keep dangling the carrot, leaving Cole with a void, something that he can thank MJF later for. And that was the end of the video. Cole, back in the ring, said that MJF can run, but he can't hide. and promises that when he gets his hands on him, he's going to get the ass beating of a lifetime, and MJF is going to wish that the two of them never met. When we came into this show tonight, and I knew that they were promoting an Adam Cole promo for this show, I was hoping for a promo that was not the promo that we got here. What I was hoping for and what I was expecting is not what we got. Now, he had great fire when he was talking about MJF. He was angry, right? You could tell. He was all fired up, and so that was good. Talked about how much he hates MJF and scum of the earth. You're the worst person in the world. He is still the one who betrayed MJF. Not the other way around. That's what we saw. That was the big angle at World's End. MJF was the babyface. He got beat. We saw Adam Cole with the devil mask. It was him, and it was Wardlow, and it was Roddy, and it was the Kingdom. And that was the angle they shot. The betrayal came from MJF, or came from Adam Cole to MJF. Okay, not the other way around. It wasn't going to be enough to just come out and say the things that Adam Cole said here. He can come out and say that MJF is a scumbag, and he revealed himself, as you saw, to be a scumbag all along, right? He could say that. He could say that, and all of that may be true, but basically what he did here in this promo was he went with the excuse of he's a phony, and he was never genuine. He was stringing everybody along, and I was hip to it the entire time, and the guy is a piece of shit. As far as what we saw on TV, you know, Cole had actually changed him. That's not what we saw. We saw that he changed this man, and we had those promos from MJF talking about, I'm still a scumbag, but I'm your scumbag. And, you know, I didn't trust before, but now I have a friend, right? We remember all those promos, right? So all he's doing here coming out is saying, well, it was all fake. It was all phony, and nothing he ever said was ever true. And, you know, at what point he knew this, I don't know. But that's basically the explanation they went with here. MJF put his trust in this man. And now MJF says, well, you know, I've learned my lesson. I'll never do that again. It makes me sympathize to some degree with MJF because he's right. He put his faith and trust in Adam Cole, and Adam Cole betrayed that trust. He put the knife right in his fucking back. So I actually have a little bit of sympathy for this guy. But what I was looking for that we did not get in this promo at no point was the mention of the injury that kept Adam Cole out of action for all these months. And that is what I was looking for, because everybody was coming at me saying, you can't justify this, you can't explain this, it doesn't make any sense. And I said, no, actually, you can make sense of it. And all Adam Cole has to do is come out, and the number one thing he has to bring up is that ankle injury. Because when he came out of Grand Slam last year on that ramp at Arthur Ashe, he ran down to the ring and he jumped off and he broke his fucking ankle. And the reason he did that was because he was coming out for MJF. He was coming out to help him. He was coming out there to cheerlead for him because he was his best friend and he wanted to be there and support him in his match with Samoa Joe. And in the process, he fucked his ankle up so badly he needed multiple surgeries and he missed a year plus of his career down the drain. Not because of a match that he was in, but because he wanted to come out to be by his friend's side. And if ever there was a reason that you could understand why Adam Cole would be upset, I lost over a year of my career and you came back and all you did was just reveal that all along you were a piece of shit. You mean to tell me that I came out and I lost 13, 14, 15 months of my career for a guy who was stringing me along the entire time? Now, of course, you would have to blank all the shit that we saw at World's End out of your memory, which I'm trying to do anyway because that angle fucking sucked. So no matter which way you look at it here, you kind of have to ignore all the Undisputed Kingdom stuff to try to make some semblance of sense out of this. But at no point during this promo did I hear anything mentioned about the ankle injury. The most serious injury of this man's career, cost him so much time. No mention of it. It's just, oh, you're a piece of shit. You're a fake. You're a phony. You got phony hair. And when I see you, I'm going to beat you up. Okay. If that's what you want to do, if that's what you want to go with, fine. But I thought that this promo was a fail. This promo did not I think, succeed in what it should have set out to do to try to make some real sense out of what we saw at the pay-per-view. So Adam Cole may be over as a babyface and everyone's doing the chant and we're kind of right back to where we were, I guess, you know, over a year ago. But I just thought this promo was a fail. I really do. I just don't understand how that isn't the focal point of the promo and how you don't bring that up. That's a pretty significant part of the story. Or maybe I'm just trying to make sense of the indefensible here by trying to come up with some rational explanation for why we saw what we saw. Fuck me, I guess. I don't know. Renee was backstage. This is on Saturday. Okay, so this is footage from Saturday now, backstage of Wrestle Dream. She's backstage with Chris Jericho after his match with Mark Briscoe, which he lost. And he said he felt vindicated. And Jericho said that he's in the number one movie in America right now, Terrifier 3. I still haven't seen Terrifier 2, so you'll have to let me know how Terrifier 3 is. I hear it did not go so well for Mr. Jericho in that movie. But he's in the number one. Is it really the number one movie in America? Good for them. Can't be a very big budget for that. If it's number one, then good for them. He says Fozzy is on tour across the country. He was going to become the Nueve when he won the Ring of Honor world title at Wrestle Dream, but Mark Briscoe cheated. So he wants a rematch. Oh, God. Wonderful. As soon as he said that fucking word, I almost turned the TV off. So he wants to become a two-time Ring of Honor world champion. We are continuing with this. I thought it was open and shut at Wrestle Dream. He beat him, and that's it. We move on. We go on from here. Yes, we go on. We go on to the next match because we're going to do this again. He says he's going to become a two-time Ring of Honor world champion, just like Jay Briscoe. Now we come back live, and we're in the back with Mark Briscoe. And he says that Jericho has been known to say a lot of dumb stuff. He can let that go in one ear and out the other, but what he can't tolerate from Jericho is him bringing up his brother again. So Jericho is going to pay. He says he accepts. And not only does he accept, and Jericho will get his rematch, but it's going to happen next week on Dynamite, and it's going to be a ladder war for the Ring of Honor World Championship. It's like the hamster on the wheel, you know? So we're going to get this again. Are we going to get a third match after that? Maybe a fourth. Got to have something for Jericho, right? So what else is he going to do? Here I am, still waiting for Big Bill to split away from Jericho, or at least shoot the angle to begin the story of Big Bill eventually splitting apart from Jericho. You know what? It's been a success in this regard. It's gotten Big Bill on television, doing stuff more than he was doing before. Not that he's been doing a whole lot, but he's at least been getting some TV time, and that's great. And guess what? Now it's time to move this story ahead and begin the split so that he can branch, see what I did there? Branch off, and then he could do other stuff. Because Big Bill fucking rocks, and I want to see him doing more shit, but this stuff ain't it. So we get a ladder match next week on TV. We have FTR and Big Bill and Brian Keith tag team match. Nigel McGuinness on commentary talked about Brian Danielson's career being over for now, which is a pretty important distinction to make here. Pretty important point to mention. He did say for now, which I think we all figured anyway. Big Bill avoided a shatter machine and powerbombed Dax, then launched Cash Wheeler over the top. Brian Keith made the tag and hit the diamond dust into a Big Bill boot, only for a two count. Wheeler hit a tornado DDT off the apron outside on Bill, so that took him out of the equation. And back inside, the shatter machine on Brian Keith led to the win for FTR. Bill had a chance to shine here. He had a couple of big spots in this match, and he continues to do so in these situations. And it had better be leading to something for him. I hope so. They showed Roosh. When this was over, they showed Roosh, Dralístico, and the Beast Mortos watching on a screen in the back, no Jake Roberts. Maybe he's gonna manage them remotely. Like back in the COVID days where everything was remote. Maybe Jake Roberts is gonna manage them and guide them via Zoom. So he doesn't even have to travel to the buildings. What do you think about that? This week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. You know, I'm on YouTube every week, multiple times a week, live streaming to thousands of people. And all you get to see is my face. You don't need to see any other parts of me, but that isn't true for everyone. Some people live stream themselves online even in their most intimate moments. Not me. There's no Sala Monster after dark. But if that's you, imagine going online without ExpressVPN and accidentally sharing some very private moments with the rest of the world. There isn't a rock big enough that you would be able to hide under. And forget the embarrassment of it. There's no telling what kind of implications something like that could have on your career, let alone your personal life. Use ExpressVPN and don't ever take that chance. Because all of your traffic flows through your internet service provider, they know every single website that you visit. And in the U.S., ISPs are legally allowed to sell that information to advertisers. ExpressVPN reroutes 100% of your traffic through secure, encrypted servers, so your ISP can't see your browsing history. And look, I mean, I'm having fun here, but it doesn't even have to be anything dirty. You know, people search for some weird things online. Maybe you just don't want total strangers to know what that is. What makes ExpressVPN the best VPN is how easy it is to use. You just fire up the app, you click one button, and you're protected. It also works on all of your devices, including phones, laptops, tablets, and smart TVs. And it hides your IP address, making it extremely difficult for third parties to track your online activity. Whenever I fly somewhere, as I did a couple of different times this year, even just last month on my trip to Chicago for House of Glory, I made sure that I had my ExpressVPN app loaded up on my phone because it gave me that peace of mind, knowing that I was protected. And that's important to me. I know that my activity and my data is safe and secure. I have enough on my mind to think about any given moment without having to think about that. Protect your online privacy today by visiting expressvpn.com/solomonster. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster. And you can get an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/solomonster. So back to the ring. FTR is still out there. We hear Dance with the Dead. And out come the Outrunners. Truth Magnum and Turbo Floyd. They come out to a big ovation, as they usually get now when they come out, no matter where they are. They come to the ring to celebrate with FTR. They do the Predator double handshake. They do a pose down with FTR, which got over great. Renee was backstage with the Acclaimed. And Max Caster said that they're coming off another pay-per-view win, but they want more. Maybe he should get the Beast Mortos. Then he can get more. He can get Mortos. So MVP walks in with Shelton Benjamin and tells them to give him a call when they decide to get serious. And he hands them his business card. Anthony Bowens says that they don't need anything from him. But Max Caster, he did pocket the business card. So keep that in mind. That could mean something down the road, potentially. Or it can mean absolutely nothing at all. Kind of like Finn Balor with the Liv Morgan hotel key card. That didn't really go anywhere either. But just keep that in mind. Caster did pocket the business card. We had Mercedes Moné against Queen Aminata for the TBS Championship. They had an average match. Camille saved Mercedes from a baseball slide early, so Aminata popped her with a headbutt. But that distraction was enough for Mercedes to slam Aminata into the steps and hit a Meteora also into the steps, which took us into a picture-in-picture break. Aminata mounted a comeback, and Moné hit a Meteora out of the corner and then a backstabber that led to the statement maker for the submission win. Again, I'm very happy that she has seemingly ditched, the Moné maker finish, which was just awful. For the old bank statement, which is a much better finish for her. This is at least the second time in a row, maybe third, that I've seen her use the move, so I'm just going to assume this is her finish again. Now, they are going with Chris Statlander. They seemed to be building to the direction of Mercedes and Chris Statlander for the TBS title. You would never know it, though, watching the show tonight, because there was no Chris Statlander, and I don't even know that she was mentioned here. Maybe there was a fleeting mention by Excalibur, but there was really no mention of Statlander. So if they're going to wait until Full Gear to do the match, Full Gear isn't until the 23rd of November. So, I mean, they have over a month, but they are going to have to start doing some building here very soon to build up to that match if they're going to be doing it. And again, maybe they'll do it before then. They may not even wait until Full Gear. Renee was backstage. I should probably record myself and just push a button, because it's like every other segment, it was Renee. Like, poor Renee is running around doing all these interviews. Do they have nobody else? She was backstage with Private Party, who also requested that the Young Bucks join them. So Zay and Quinn said that they were this close to winning the AEW tag team titles at WrestleDream, and they won another shot. And Matthew said that he was wrong when he called them on Saturday a mid-card act. He said they pushed the Bucks to their limit, and then Nicholas said, but as far as a rematch, that doesn't work for us, brother. And that's your last shot at the AEW tag team titles. So the Bucks walk off. Stokely Hathaway walks in. He asks why Private Party deserve another shot when they've been here since the Obama administration. And he suggests that the next time they lose, Private Party should just be done. So he said that everyone knows Isaiah Cassidy is the star of the team anyway. He walked off, and Cassidy said, if that's what it takes, then that's what it takes. So I guess they're doing a story where they're going to be breaking up the next time they lose a match on, anywhere, on TV, pay-per-view, wherever. Next time Private Party loses, Private Party is no more. Now, maybe Private Party will get the belts after all, because you watch this segment, and between what Stokely said and the fact that they're still sticking with Private Party, wanting a shot at the titles, one would think that in the end they will get the tag team titles. I would certainly hope, based on what they did here, that that's what this is building to. But then I also think of the Outrunners, and the Outrunners right now, they're just fun. You know, they're fun. Everybody loves these two guys. Big ovation whenever they come out. Sometimes you got to strike while the iron is hot. Private Party had their shot at WrestleDream. They failed. There's no other team on the horizon right now that really is of any interest, I think, to anybody as far as winning the tag team titles. I don't know if the plan is to wait until Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi come back. That's at least a couple of months away. I've heard conflicting things about Omega and when he may or may not be back. It could be as little as 2 months. It could be 6 months. We don't know. But you can't just wait around for those guys to come back. You could still do the Young Bucks and the Golden Lovers. It doesn't have to be with the tag team titles. I would put the belts on the Outrunners. But if they are serious about putting the belts on Private Party, then great. Let that story play out, and maybe they'll actually get the belts in the end. But if not, and frankly, part of me even feels like even if that is the plan, I still think the Outrunners should get at least a short run with those tag team titles. They should definitely be in the conversation, for sure. So the Elite now were backstage, and Jack Perry said they need to handle business before they go out there tonight for their trios match, because today, now he wasn't in the match, it was Okada and the Bucks, but before their match, he mentioned that today is Kenny Omega's birthday. This is why I bring up Omega, because they brought him up here in this segment. And again, I've seen reports that he may possibly be able to come back maybe in a couple of months. Again, we don't know. But he mentioned that today was Omega's birthday. And Perry said that he understands Omega has had 20 feet of his intestines removed after they laid him out. Then they showed a birthday cake that said, "Happy Birthday, Kenny," on it, until Jack Perry dumps a bucket full of guts. It looked like a bucket full of intestines all over the cake. And then Okada says, "Happy birthday, bitch," as Perry tells Omega to get well soon or die. I don't care. So then it was the Elite. Kazuchika Okada and the Young Bucks taking on the Conglomeration. Orange Cassidy, Kyle O'Reilly, and Rocky Romero, not Mark Briscoe. It was Rocky Romero. solid enough match until the DQ finish. Matt Jackson got spiked by an Orange Cassidy DDT, and as he went for the orange punch, Wheeler Yuta ran in with a Busaiku knee to take him out. Referee called for the disqualification. So the Elite now, they bailed out of the ring, and they're on the ramp. So they're watching now from afar, as far as what's going on here. John Moxley, Marina Shafir, Claudio Castagnoli, and Pac, they come out. Pac had a briefcase with him, by the way. No mention of what was in it, just he had a briefcase with him. It's like Vince McMahon back in the 80s. So they're beating up the conglomeration. That leaves Orange Cassidy now outnumbered 4-on-1. Top Flight and Action Andretti, they sprint to the ring. Here they come. Here come the reinforcements. And what happens? They get their fucking asses kicked. And they get laid out. And the Elite continues to stand there on the ramp and just watch all of this happen. And they call themselves EVPs. They're allowing this to happen. They're not doing anything. So here comes the Dork Order. They run out. And as they're running to the ring, like Evil Uno is there and he's looking at the Elite. He's looking at the Bucks and he's going, what are you guys doing? You're not going to do anything? So they continue running to the ring. And of course, the Dork Order gets in the ring and they get their asses handed to them. I mean, did you think it was going to go any other way? So then Jack Perry walks out and he takes the other Elite members and they retreat to the back. Claudio in the ring, he took off Alex Reynolds' belt. Marina Shafir used it to choke him out against the ring post. Excalibur on commentary mentioned that Darby Allin is not here tonight and he has been unreachable. Moxley said that if you are involved in any way, shape, or form with All Elite Wrestling, you are under attack. If you don't like it, this is the cost of doing business. And the BCC left through the crowd as Daniel Garcia, Private Party, and Christopher Daniels all hit the ring to help everybody who was down and laid out. This was the usual BCC attack that we've been seeing. They added a little wrinkle in here, though, with the Elite standing by and watching and not doing anything. So my first thought when I see this is, the Elite actually in cahoots with the Blackpool Combat Club? Or is it a case where they're just a bunch of cowards and they just don't want to get involved, right? Shit, we don't want to have any part of this. So are they in cahoots? Possible. But I had another thought. I had a wild idea. And I actually hate it. But the thought did occur to me as I'm watching this play itself out. What if, after their own little failed takeover of sorts of this company here with the Elite, what if after everything that we saw, going back to when Jack Perry and the Bucks attacked Tony Khan and this whole Elite storyline got kicked off, what if in the end, the plan is to have the Elite have to save AEW from this new sort of invading force in the Blackpool Combat Club? What if this turns into some kind of a redemption arc for the fucking Elite, where 3 months from now or 4 months from now, we see the Bucks come to their senses and now we need the Young Bucks and Jack Perry and Okada to come to the aid of AEW, like the knights in shining armor, riding in on their horses to save the day? How fucking terrible would that be? Again, the thought occurred to me. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that's not at all what's going on here, because I hate that idea, but I don't think we can completely discount it either. I really hope not. Now, I should also mention that Moxley did not have the AEW title with him. He just won it on Saturday. He did not have the championship with him. Pac was out there. He had a briefcase. Could the belt have been in the briefcase? Maybe. Nobody said if it was. And the last time we saw the belt, it was being stuffed into a bag. So we had a bag and not a briefcase. Now we had a briefcase, but what was inside the briefcase, we don't know. Maybe it's drug money. Maybe it was a bomb. Maybe it was a belt. Who knows? This angle is in limbo right now until we see what the real next step is, because this shit with you know, again, even Private Party, I'm sorry to say, Private Party and Top Flight and all these lower rung people in AEW running out to save the day and getting their asses kicked, by the way, you would think is paving the way for the bigger names. That's why I said at the beginning of the stream, you know, these stories have to play themselves out. But in terms of that first big follow-up coming out of Wrestle Dream and that big angle that we saw, it just wasn't what I think they needed to do to really hook people in. Like, why wouldn't you have Darby Allin on this show? Especially because he was there at the end of the show on Saturday. He was right in the thick of it. You know, Darby, my impression from when Wrestle Dream was over is that they're building to Darby being the one to beat Jon Moxley to win the AEW World title. I still feel that way. I don't know how that's going to conflict with him climbing Mount Everest next year. But that's still how I feel. Like, this could be a vehicle to get the AEW World Championship onto Darby Allin and make Darby Allin kind of the savior of AEW in the end. And then he gets that win over Mox, because Mox was the one that beat him at Grand Slam. I actually had another thought, which is that, and it would be such a Darby thing to do, let's say Darby can't be the champion long term because he is going to go away and he is going to climb the mountain. Can you envision a scenario? Maybe it's Revolution, maybe it's Grand Slam in Australia, where Darby beats Jon Moxley and he wins the AEW World Championship. And either that night or that Wednesday on Dynamite, Christian cashes in his world title contract and he beats Darby and wins the championship. And how appropriate it would be for Darby Allin to be beaten and lose his title to the man who had a contract only because Darby gave that contract up willingly. And Christian was able to kind of swoop in and win the championship. Now, Christian technically won his shot at All In. But the point is, Darby had a guaranteed contract, a guaranteed title shot of his own that he willingly gave up. And Christian is the one who sneaks in there and swoops in and wins the championship and does what Darby could have done but chose not to do with his own shot. It would kind of be appropriate, I feel like, in that way. But I still feel like Darby is probably the likeliest, I think, to come out of this with the AEW World title, just the way things seem to be shaping up, and yet he wasn't even on the show tonight. Now, the Elite was walking through the back after this, and they were approached by Arcady Aura, so I guess there was one backstage interviewer other than Renee on this show. And she wanted to know, why did you guys just stand there and do nothing? You guys are the EVPs, and you didn't do anything to help out. So Jack Perry got up in Daniel Garcia's face, because Garcia showed up. And Private Party showed up at that moment as well. And they got up in the Elite's faces and said, what's up with you guys? Like, you guys are just going to stand by and watch this company fall? You're just going to stand by and watch this company crumble? So Jack Perry, he gets up in Daniel Garcia's face. They go literally forehead to forehead here. They have to be kept apart. And Nicholas told Perry in due time. Garcia turned to Private Party and said, look, things are going to get worse before they get better. Things are going to get crazy around here. I got your back if you guys got my back. And they agreed. And that's nice that they're trying to form a united front here in AEW, but is anybody going to care? That's my question to you. Can an angle like this work if on the babyface side, you have people like Top Flight and Private Party and Action Andretti and Daniel Garcia, who were the ones who were standing up for the company, who were supposed to be the tough guys who were going to get in the way of the BCC and try to stop them from just taking over the whole thing. Can you buy into that? Does that get you excited? Is that something that you want to see and that you can believe in? Because what this company is trying to do, what they are in need of, and what they're trying to do is just hit on that big angle that gets people to tune in every week like, holy shit, I got to see what's going to happen next year. This doesn't feel like it's it. They're going to have to do more than what we're seeing here. Shelton Benjamin made his in-ring debut tonight. with MVP in his corner. He went one-on-one with Leo Rush. And when I saw that this was the match that they made, I thought, this is genius. Leo Rush is a small man, and it allows him to evade his opponents. He's obviously very quick. He's a very unique wrestler to watch. There really isn't anybody else like him, the way he moves around the ring, and he kind of ducks and dodges when people come after him. Now I just thought, man, they're going to have Shelton just go in there and murder this guy. And that's basically what happened here. He went in there, and look, Shelton Benjamin is 48 years old, I believe, and he is still in fantastic physical shape. So he just comes out there and he's just physically like taller than Leo Rush. I think most people are, but he's just bigger. He just looked like a fucking monster out there next to him in a way that he probably would not have looked if you put him in the ring with a Lance Archer or a Brian Cage or a Will Hobbs or Hangman Page. You know, it really just was that much more magnified, him being in there with somebody the size and stature of Leo Rush. So I just thought it worked so well here. He used his speed, but Benjamin was just mowing him down, throwing him around like he was nothing. Benjamin also hit this move that I don't believe I've seen before. I mean, I've seen step up knees, but he did a step up knee strike as Leo Rush was hitting the ropes and coming off for an attempted dive before he could do the move. And as he hit the ropes, Benjamin, who was on the floor, and it might have been just in one fluid motion, did a step-up knee using the apron and just blasted him right in the head with a knee strike. So that was cool. During the break, Benjamin just, I mean, they replayed it when they came back, so it happened during the break. He launched Leo Rush across the ring on an Irish whip, and Leo took this great bump through the ropes. It looked like he hit the post on the way down. Rush later on flipped out of a T-bone attempt, and a spinning DDT spiked Shelton for a two count. Leo took way too long on the top rope, and so Benjamin was able to scale the ropes and hit a huge superplex. Release German suplex led to a super kick that hit flush, and then there was an awkward-looking pop-up flatliner by Benjamin. I was hoping that that would not be the finish, and then it wasn't. He got up, and he delivered an exploder T-bone suplex for the win. MVP got on the mic when this was over, and he said that Leo Rush opened his mouth, and so Shelton Benjamin made it a point to close it. He said he can't make a better statement than what Benjamin just did, but he will say, Swerve Strickland, if you're listening, he knows that he's watching. Strickland needs to reconsider his position because this is his future. If I had one criticism of this, and it really is the only thing I would say about this match, because I really liked it, this did not need 11 minutes. But other than shortening the length of the match, I thought this was a great debut for Shelton Benjamin. He looked like an absolute monster in a way that he never did in WWE when he was in the Hurt Business, or even earlier in his career when he was part of the world's greatest tag team. Like, he looked like a monster in there. And I'm watching him flinging Leo Rush around looking like a monster, and I'm just thinking to myself, man, if he looks like a monster, what's it going to be like when Bobby Lashley comes in and he's towering over half the fucking roster and he's got somebody in the Hurt Lock and he's ragdolling him and throwing him around? Like, you'd think Shelton looks like a beast. Wait until Bobby Lashley shows up. I mean, that guy is just built different. And you know he's coming in. Now, MVP had delivered a little message here for Swerve. Swerve didn't come out. I said, okay, so I guess Swerve's not on the show either. We have no Darby, we have no Ospreay, we have no Swerve. The very next segment, there's Swerve. Swerve and Prince Nana are in the back with Renee, so I don't know why they didn't come out when MVP started talking about him. Swerve said that he accepts the challenge anytime, anywhere. He says, make it happen. And he tells Benjamin not to fail when coming at him. And then later on, they made it official. They did announce the match on the October 30th episode of Dynamite, which is in 2 weeks. It's going to be a Halloween-themed episode called Fright Night Dynamite. There have been a few Fright Night Dynamites in recent months, and it will be Swerve Strickland one-on-one with Shelton Benjamin. So I am very much looking forward to that. Do they debut Bobby Lashley on that show? Do they hold him off until Full Gear, which is over a month away? I really thought we were going to see him at WrestleDream. So, yeah, I think there's a pretty decent chance we end up seeing him on the 30th. Do they let Swerve beat Benjamin, or do they have Lashley show up and then we end up with some kind of a no contest? That would be my only question. But we know he's coming in. You know, he's going to be the crown jewel of MVP's faction here. So MVP's been doing a lot of recruiting and passing around his business card. So we don't know what other members he may recruit. I mentioned Will Hobbs before. There doesn't seem to be a spot anymore in the Callis family for Will Hobbs. What if Will Hobbs was recruited by MVP? I mean, you talk about big guys. Imagine the crew of Bobby Lashley, Will Hobbs, and Shelton Benjamin walking out. Imagine those three walking out to the ring together, towering over everybody else. You want a Hurt Syndicate? That's a Hurt Syndicate. Oh, I should mention, that reminds me. I don't believe that on television, even a single time, the name Hurt Syndicate has been mentioned, but Tony Khan mentioned it in a tweet when he, I think it might have been where he mentioned Shelton Benjamin making his in-ring debut. So Tony Khan went and spoiled the name of the faction, but I don't think they've mentioned it on television a single time. Have they mentioned Hurt Syndicate on TV? Not that I can remember. Apparently that's what they are. So Tony Schiavone was in the ring to introduce Don Callis for a Callis family press conference. Callis walked out with Lance Archer, who was out there looking like a great value Drew McIntyre, and the new Ring of Honor television champion, Brian Cage. And if you're rubbing your eyes and wondering, wait, do my eyes deceive me? Is that Brian Cage? Why is Brian Cage with Don Callis? Because. Fuck you. That's why. Because Don Callis wants to go after the tag team titles. And so he has decided to recruit Brian Cage. Just like that. It was a closed door meeting, I guess, and it was done off camera. Maybe, done in the darkness so nobody could really know what was said or what was exchanged. But now he's part of the family, just like that. You know, when it comes to a lot of things on this television show, it really doesn't get any deeper than that. Take a look at Chris Statlander. So even though this was called a press conference, Callis said, since there are no real journalists in pro wrestling, which I'm starting to think is undoubtedly true after that embarrassing press scrum on Saturday, I think he's right. He said he's going to answer all the questions about this family stuff all by himself. So last week, he acquired Lance Archer, and now he wants to go after the tag team titles. So Cage and Archer are going to go after the tag team titles. There you go. That's all the explanation you need. Callis then brings out two men everybody has been talking about, the new international champion, Konosuke Takeshita, and Kyle Fletcher. Callis said the Alpha and himself are going to every corner of the globe to defend the international title. Takeshita said that he's going to defend that title all over the world, and if you want it, come and take it. Fletcher then said that all he has heard since Saturday is, why, Kyle, why? Really? Who was saying that? Show them to me. Where was this groundswell on social media? Why, Kyle, why? Not Jeff Jarrett. Love Jim Ross. Yes, he says everybody's been saying and asking him, why, Kyle, why? All right, I'll play along. He said, that's the problem. Everybody wants to talk Will Ospreay when Don Callis' family is having its biggest night in history. So Fletcher, and this was the kicker. After we see Brian Cage come out at the beginning of this segment, just now he's just a member all of a sudden out of nowhere. He's a member of the Callis family, right? I don't know where Will Hobbs fits in all this, but now Brian Cage is a member of the Callis family. Kyle Fletcher is out here. Why did he attack Will Ospreay? He says he's not going to say why he did what he did. I give up. You can't make this shit up. We get no answers on the Moxley storyline. Kyle Fletcher comes out here. You know what? I'm not going to tell you why I turned on Will Ospreay. So there you go. Great storytelling. I love it. You got to give us something. They gave you nothing. 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 Whatever. Renee was backstage with the AEW Women's World Show. It gets even better. She was backstage with Mariah May, the lovely Mariah May, who was very upset that everybody was drooling over Willow Nightingale after WrestleDream and why the women, she wanted to know why the women, or a woman in this case, that she killed is on magazine covers. She was referring to Toni Storm, who ranked number one in the PWI Women's 250 list. She says she's never gotten her celebration with Mina Shirakawa. Britt Baker faked an injury. Who will step up? What is Christopher Daniels even doing, she said. That's a great question. Mariah said that AEW is supposed to be where the best wrestle, and instead it's where they are afraid of the glamour. And all of a sudden, Anna Jay comes into camera frame, and she gets into an altercation with Mariah May. Christopher Daniels steps in. Anna tries to slap Mariah. Mariah moves, and Anna accidentally smacks Christopher Daniels in the face. And Mariah leaves. And Anna is very apologetic to Christopher Daniels. Are you okay? And he said, it's okay. Why? Why? What are we doing with this woman? What are we doing here? I mentioned Jamie Hayter before. Jamie Hayter was randomly attacked last week by Penelope Ford. Mariah May now here, randomly attacked by Anna Jay, who wants to get a piece of her. And maybe there was a previous scuffle between them on Rampage or Collision. If there was, it was certainly nothing that was focused on or mentioned at the WrestleDream show. But here, out of nowhere, Anna Jay, who just recently completed a tour, her first tour of Japan. She was in Stardom. Now she's all up in Mariah's face. Just like that. Okay. So now we'll get a, you know, throwaway match with her and Anna Jay. She'll beat Anna. But my question is, what is next for Mariah May? I thought it was going to be Mina. They brought Mina back to the States. I said, okay, we're going to get Mariah and Mina. Maybe Mariah is going to end up trying to turn on Mina the way she did Tony, but Mina will see it coming, and then it'll lead to a match between the two of them. And then that didn't happen. Jamie Hayter should be the ultimate destination, but I wouldn't actually do that match until early next year. So I'm fine with not going into it right now, right away. But, you know, the thing with Jamie Hayter is we're not seeing her as much as we should. Jamie Hayter has money written all over her. Jamie Hayter is, I kind of look at Jamie Hayter in a similar way to Rhea Ripley, in that Rhea Ripley comes out there and she just exudes star. So you want her on your television show every single week. She doesn't wrestle every single week, but she's on the show, and usually in multiple segments, because she's a star. Jamie Hayter is and can be a big star for Tony Khan in AEW. But it's the same thing where somebody will come back and they'll be on the television show and then they won't be on the show at all. It could be 2 weeks, 3 weeks before we see them again. And it's not like she's involved in anything significant at the moment. So at what point do we begin the process of trying to give her credible opponents to begin building her to a point where she can then say, hey, I've been back a few months now and I got my eye on that championship that I got screwed out of and I never lost fairly. Because she was the AEW Women's World Champion. It's like MJF coming back at Double or Nothing and not making it a point to want to go back after the AEW World title. The reason they didn't do it is because they don't want him in the world title picture right now. But it was idiotic because he got fucked out of the World Championship. And the first thing that he should want when he comes back is to be in the mix and in the conversation for a shot at that world title. And it just so happened that they were going into the Owen Hart Foundation tournament. How ridiculous. How ridiculous that you would not have him in a tournament for a shot at the world championship this man was your world champion for over a year. So that didn't make any sense. And this also, to a lesser extent, does not make any sense. Why are they not making more use of her? She's a star. Some of these other women, some of these other people, they're not stars. This woman is a star. Do more with her. And for the love of God, find something meaningful for Mariah May to do. Maybe I was just spoiled by how great that story was, you know, with her and Tony and the way they built that up over all those months. And now everything just feels so underwhelming. It's like they don't know what to do with her. Renee was in the back to interview Ricochet. He said that he wasn't pinned at WrestleDream, and he wanted the shot that Takeshita had screwed him out of twice now. He said that his greatness was defined by his matches, and said that anybody can step up to him because he's going to be on Collision on Saturday. That's where people go to die. But he'll be there. He'll be on Collision on Saturday. So if you want to tune in to see Ricochet, then you can watch Collision. Elsewhere backstage, Moxley and company, they are beating up more people. This time they're abusing the Dark Order, and they're beating up Action Andretti and Top Flight. And they get in the back of their pickup truck, and they drive off. And Evil Uno, I can't even say he looked. He's got a fucking mask on. But boy, was he angry. You don't want to get Evil Uno mad. He was mad, bro. He was mad. And he got up in front of the camera, and he was yelling at Moxley and the BCC, and he said that we're ready to fight the BCC anywhere, everywhere that you guys show up. I'm sure that Jon Moxley, when he gets that message, Jon Moxley is going to have piss running down his leg when he finds out that the Dark Order is mad at him, and they're coming for him. He may retire. He may forfeit the title and retire right then and there. I'm sure he's just going to be so scared. Top Flight then took the camera. They were very upset because they got their asses kicked for the second time on this show. So they took the camera and said the BCC are going to have to go through them. They're going to have to go. I'm sorry. I was going to try to say that with a straight face. They've got to go through them if they want to take over this company. And so it's going to be them in Action Andretti challenging the BCC on Collision this weekend. Very good. So Moxley and company, they have to go through the Dark Order and these guys here if they want control of AEW. Boy, that's a steep mountain to climb. You know what it would be like? It would be like, I guess in the early days, you would say, of the NWO, where they're just coming out and beating people up, you know, and spray painting shit.
I love you, Solo! You are my tribal chief!
Spray painting shit, and they're just wreaking havoc across the company. And you get, like, a bunch of the luchadors, you know, to come out and, like, Ciclope and Blitzkrieg. And who else? Psychosis, and we've got El Dandy, and we've got all these different people, right? La Parca, remember La Parca? La Parca did that little dance. Love La Parca, man. All these guys coming out, and they're going to cut a promo. Hey, NWO, you know? Well, they probably, I don't know if they could cut promos, but cut promos on the NWO about how, you know, you guys, you got to go through us. You got to go through us if you want to take over WCW. It's like, oh my God, come on, man. Come on. And the crowd would chant, you know, the crowd would cheer for the NWO, like, to kill those guys. I'd be surprised if the BCC weren't cheered over these guys, too. I don't know. It's just comical. Where is La Parca, anyway? I miss La Parca. La Parca was more entertaining than any of this, I'll tell you that. Oh, the main event. Oh, we got to talk about this. We got to talk about this very unfortunate little faux pas. Christian Cage, one-on-one with Switchblade Jay White. Jay White in the main event. Like to see him in the main event. I just wish it was a better match. Very slow early on, but it did pick up near the end. Nick Wayne, at the beginning of the match, Nick Wayne was out there, Mother Wayne, Killswitch is still not there. He is still, I don't know if he's in the hospital. He might be home, but he is recovering, for those who don't know, from double pneumonia in his lungs. And that's a very serious situation, so I don't think we're going to be seeing him for a while. But Nick Wayne was out there with the chair, and it was very smart on his part, because he had the chair and he was kind of like making like he was going to slide it into the ring, but then he saw Juice Robinson and the Guns, and they were coming around the bend, and he kind of left the chair. And when Bryce Remsburg turned around and looked, he saw them, you know, over there with the chair, even though they didn't use it at all, but he ejected Juice Robinson and the Bang Bang Gang. And Nick Wayne was very happy about this, and he was gloating. So Cage was in control through the commercial break, and Jay White starts mounting a comeback. Christian hung him up on the top rope and managed a reverse DDT onto the edge of the ring. Tornado DDT back inside for a two count by Christian. And now he's crouched down in the corner, and he is signaling for the spear. All of a sudden, Kip Sabian jumps up on the apron. Now, Kip Sabian has been hanging around the patriarchy for a while. We've seen Nick Wayne get up in his face. I don't know what his deal is, and I'm just going to be honest with you. I don't care. Like, I don't give a shit. I really just don't care. It's the main event of Dynamite. Why the fuck is Kip Sabian out there? Okay? So Kip Sabian jumps up on the apron. Christian Cage looks over at Sabian, who was supposed to be taking the referee for a distraction. The problem is, somebody got their lines crossed up here, and he went too early. Because later in the match, you'll notice when he tried this again, it was Christian crouching down for the spear, I believe. Well, he obviously thought, unless somebody told him to go, he obviously thought, oh shit, it's the spot, but it wasn't. Christian looks over and sees Kip Sabian and realizes that it's too early. It's not time yet for him to be up on the apron, because we're not at the finish yet. And he audibly yells over to Kip Sabian, not yet. He's like yelling at the, not yet. So Kip Sabian then jumps down from the apron, and Kip Sabian, he goes into the crowd and sits back down. They showed him. He goes into the crowd. He's just like, oh shit, sorry. And he sits down. Meanwhile, Hangman Page, obviously he saw him coming, you know, in to do his spot, and he knows that when he does that, he has to come in to do his part. But again, it's too early. So Hangman Page hits the ring, and before he gets in the ring, he just ducks down on the floor outside. We already saw him run down to the ring. But instead, he gets down, he gets down on the ground, and he starts camping out on the floor for the next few minutes. And I'm like, I can't believe this is happening. This is the main event on this show. How does this happen? I don't know how. I don't know where the breakdown in communication was. I don't know. It could have just very easily have been Kip Sabian just fucked up and thought that it was the spot, and it wasn't. And it just sort of had this cascading effect. Now, to their credit, They tried to just play it off, and they did the best they could with it, right? I mean, mistakes happen, but boy, this was a bad spot for a mistake like that to happen. That was embarrassing. So Hangman is, and now the camera is showing Hangman, because you got to acknowledge him. You can't just ignore it now. So they show Hangman, and he's just kind of he's laying on the ground outside, and he's got these big bug eyes out of his head. He looks ridiculous. So the match continues. Cage gouges the eyes to get out of a Blade Runner attempt, and he hits the kill switch. Jay White kicks out. So now Christian, a few minutes later, finds himself in the corner yet again, readying for a spear. Now it's time for Kip Sabian to get up on the apron, take the referee, runs distraction as Jay White tries for a Blade Runner. Hangman gets up on the apron. He flies in for the buckshot lariat. He wipes out Jay White. Christian covers, and he gets the pin. And Hangman, after this, they show him, and he is laying on the ground outside. Do you remember the cage match on Raw? It might have been last year. I don't even remember who he... No, I guess he would have been wrestling Dexter, I guess. So it might have been Miz and Dexter Lumis. But, like, remember Dexter Lumis was had half of his body under the ring, and his top half was out, looking straight up? That's what Hangman was doing here. He was laying still like a mannequin on the floor outside when the match was over, and his eyes were just bulging out of his head. He looked completely hilarious and ridiculous all at the same time. And so that's where he laid as Christian took his world championship contract and celebrated, and he left. And that was the end of the show. Hangman Page cost Jay White a win. You know, Jay White just came back. They said, well, we got to give him a win. So they had him beat Hangman at WrestleDream. And then on Dynamite tonight, they just beat Jay White anyway. But at least he got beat by somebody who's in line to get a world championship match. At least he didn't get beat by some scrub. Yeah, I mean, I didn't enjoy the match as much as I thought I would. It was okay. But yeah, that botch was, that was unfortunate. But the Hangman Switchblade feud is going to continue, so we know we're going to get another match out of it. The Kip Sabian stuff with Christian Cage is just, it's death. It's just absolute death. I just, this is not something that I care about as far as where this is going. But where Christian is going to cash in, I suppose, is still up in the air, but If Darby wins that title, I'm telling you, Christian cashing in on him later that week and taking the title away from him in the sneakiest, slimiest way possible would fit his MO. I mean, it would be very much a Christian Cage thing to do. If he wins the championship. I don't even know that he needs to win the championship, but if he does, it has to be in the slimiest, sneakiest way possible. And that was Dynamite, a mixed bag to say the least. Some things that I liked, a lot of things that just annoyed the fuck out of me, and a lot of questions remain, frankly, about this top storyline of where it's headed and whether or not they can keep people's attention, because some of these lower-level people that are all of a sudden, you know, they're kind of growing a sack and they're standing up now to the BCC, it's just, you gotta utilize people that the fans are going to care about, and I just don't think people are going to care. Yeah, you could feed wins to the BCC this way. But if this is really supposed to be some serious angle where this group is really, it's like martial law here in this company, and they're really trying to take this whole thing over, you got to do better than this. You got to get some bigger names on this show to stand up to these guys and let them take an ass kicking and then fight back. And then you could have them kind of backed up by some of the lower rung guys who are like, hey, we're with you. You know, we love AEW too. We're with you. But right now they're just going out there and they're getting their asses kicked like Private Party. Get their asses kicked every single week. Top Flight runs out, gets their asses kicked every single week. And we're supposed to care when they say, hey, we want a match with the Blackpool Combat Club. Who cares? Who gives a shit? These people are the savior of AEW, right? Who is going to be the savior of AEW? Where is this angle going? Is there somebody else involved or not? What is Moxley's end game here? Why wasn't the championship belt even visible on the show? What was in the briefcase? It's nice to have questions with the hope that people will want to tune in to find out what the answers are to those questions, but they didn't give you anything tonight. It was just more of the same, and coming off that pay-per-view, that was probably the most disappointing thing of all. That and the Adam Cole explanation coming out of the angle with MJF. I just thought that just wasn't the way to go with that. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll. Post-Wrestle Dream Dynamite, 35% thumbs up, 23.8% thumbs in the middle, and 41% thumbs down. You have been fined by Brian Danielson. Uffman, thank you. Who are you to doubt El Dandy? We should change that to who are you to doubt La Parca? Lepar could play a mean guitar with that chair. He was the chairman. Before Sean Spears ever came along in AEW, the real chairman was Lepar, just so you know. I'm going to read through your super chats. Thank you guys for dropping the super chat love here on the stream. I always do appreciate it, and I am going to read your messages here. And we are going to begin with Jerome Eugenio. Does Shelton Benjamin have the Benjamin Button condition? I think he might. He seems to be aging in reverse. Josh Carlos, 98. Better spot. Shawn Michaels super kicking Shelton or the RKO on Matt Sydal. Shawn Michaels super kicking Shelton, for sure. Yeah. Food Hive says, what's up? So glad I'm able to catch a stream. I'm glad you're able to catch a stream, too. We don't get enough Food Hive here on these streams. I hope you're doing well, brother. Apex Caliber. At this point, AEW are the Mets and WWE are the Dodgers. You mean is, not are. Your English is poor. Drew Johnson. Dodgers are killing the Mets, bro. What the fuck? Get them back in the game, in game four. Yeah, whatever. I'm just disgusted by the whole thing. Justin G with the 12. I have nothing of value to say here. Someone had to drop this freaking tree at the start. Thank you, Solo. Thank you, mods. Thank you, chat. Can't wait for part two of the Q&A. Yeah, I did 2 hours of Q&A for those of you who left questions, the channel members who left questions. So the first hour is up right now. Hour number two will be going up next week. So keep your eyes peeled for it. A lot of good questions in there. Oz and Glorious, who dislikes what's happening more in AEW lately, Solomonster or Jon Moxley? I don't know, maybe I should join the Blackpool Combat Club. He also says, happy belated birthday, Solo, another year, and I'm still 2 weeks older than you, brother. Says Dio with Midnight Danger says, thank you for the big shout out on 883. Well, I was going to say, I mentioned Midnight Danger on the Wrestle Dream review when I was talking about the Outrunners music and liking Synthwave and Dark Synthwave, and I gave a shout out to Midnight Danger. So they actually posted an Instagram story, the band did, and they posted the clip of me mentioning that, and they gave a little shout out there, so that was very cool. So shout out to those guys. I really like their music. Midnight Danger, if you're not familiar with them, check them out. They are awesome. Dev to Dust says Shohei Ohtani. Pass it on. Shohei Ohtani smells like shit. And his interpreter was the Patsy. There you go. The Mount Vernon Kid, Christopher Bennett. Am I the only one that feels everybody slows down and pulls their hits when it comes to Okada? And it's not just this week that I've noticed. For some time. I haven't really noticed anybody wrestling differently with him. I've noticed that the Okada we get on most weeks is not the Okada that we got in New Japan, but the Okada we got in New Japan was having 20, 30, 40 minute long drawn out matches. Television's a totally different beast, so his style has definitely changed. So it's not the same Okada week to week. But as far as people pulling their punches and stuff, I mean, nothing that I've noticed. Oz and Glorious, Moxley repping all IWC content creator frustration. Maybe Moxley has a burner account. Maybe he's in the chat right now. Maybe Fire Panda is Moxley. BCOM, see clearly, Mox does have a point. And it starts with Tony Khan. Bobby's World with that $75 drop from earlier. Oh, My goodness gracious, a bomb has been dropped here by Bobby's Bro. Says, what's up, brother? You asked how the Saw movie Spiral was. I actually watched it recently and thought it was quite good. But Saw 10 was great. I'd put it in the top three Saw movies. Might sound like a low bar to set, but I'd put it behind 1 and 3. You didn't like 2? 2 gets a lot of praise. I'm surprised you don't have 2 on there. Bender McSimpson, I hope Jay White gets a permanent spot in the main event scene, but overall, I like the chaotic pace to the show. Where is Athena and Thunder Rosa? Athena is banned from Dynamite. I don't know why, but you'll never see her on the show. Because Tony Khan apparently just wants to hide her away for the rest of her career. Because she's got that long Ring of Honor Women's Championship reign. You know, who gives a shit? Thunder Rosa just got clear from a concussion, so we should be seeing her back on TV very soon. And Bender says, I like them showing off their tag teams, but they need storylines. Giving random teams title shots with no build will not work. Hulkling 93, Archer's new look equals Timu McIntyre. I said he's like a great value Drew McIntyre from like 2009. I don't know what was going on with that look. Retro KOH, Adam Cole's new gimmick is Gaslighter. It's so silly, I love it. And he's the babyface. People cheer for this. Justin G., on that note, where the hell is Samoa Joe? Samoa Joe is or was off filming Twisted Metal Season 2. I don't know if filming is over, but that's where he is. HBKC83. HBK says, what are the chances that Moxley and the crew are behind the attack on Taz? Very possible. We saw Hook in the camera frame. He came out at the end of Wrestle Dream, and he was one of the last faces we saw on TV with Orange Cassidy and Darby Allin and Daniel Garcia. He was right there. He wasn't on the show tonight. They were teasing that Christian and the Patriarchy were behind it, but I almost feel like because they were kind of pushing that, it's just a red herring to throw you off. Now I could definitely see the BCC being behind the attack. BCOM see clearly, Nigel B. Hayton, professional hater. Well, unfortunately, that's the only hater we have on TV. Jamie is nowhere to be found. Tuxedo T Servo, it's my birthday this Saturday. Tuxedo T is turning 53. I think this makes me officially old. Brother, 53, man, is, you know, come on. 53 is the new 33, don't you know? You're only as old as you feel. So if you feel young, then you're still a young man. You're young at heart. Happy birthday. Happy early birthday. Alex with the 25. What would Solo's reaction be if Bree joins Jericho's learning tree? Oh, you mean the learning Bree? Yeah, I don't think so. Do you think Warner Brothers Discovery will regret the deal they made with AEW if their ratings continue to decline? They continue to go down? Yes. But I think they know what they're getting with AEW, and they were content to give them $555 million over the course of 3 years. So they know what they're getting. If the ratings suddenly just completely cratered, then yeah, I would say, you know what I would love to know? If there's an escape clause in the contract where if Warner Brothers Discovery is not happy with their performance after maybe a year, they can get out of the deal. I'm just wondering if there's something like that in the contract. We don't know, but doesn't mean that there isn't some sort of provision in there like that. Some contracts have that. Dev to Dust, how unstoppable would the Mets be if Shohei Ohtani was on the Mets? We don't need him. All we have to do is go out there and beat him. Oz and Glorious, Garcia, Andretti, Dark Order, Private Party, Sabian, Top Flight, etc. should all be on Dark. But instead, Tony Khan is forcing them on us every single week. I don't have an issue with him putting more of a focus on younger guys like Garcia and Private Party, but having this entire crew that you just mentioned be the ones, like, the first line of defense against the BCC coming out of what we saw them do to Bryan Danielson? I mean, they killed Bryan Danielson at WrestleFest. Why aren't more people on the roster, bigger names, up in arms about this? Now, Will Ospreay was not on the show tonight, and I understand he's got his own issues right now with the Callis family. But the next time we see him, why wouldn't he want to get a piece of the BCC? You know, because he respects Bryan Danielson more than anybody. Dropped him on his head with a Tiger Driver and wouldn't even do the move after that for months because of what he did to Bryan. Why is it only the lower card guys who are going out there and fighting for the cause? Swerve Strickland. This is a great example, by the way. Everybody has their own little isolated story. When you do an angle like this, if you want people to take it seriously, and you really want to portray this as this is like a hostile takeover of this company, why wouldn't somebody like Swerve Strickland, who was the captain of Team AEW in Blood and Guts only a few months ago, and he's in the back. We saw him in the back. He never even came out in front of the live crowd, assuming that he was there and they didn't just tape that some other night. But if he was there, why wouldn't he come out? Why wouldn't he come out and try to do something? Uffman says Marina Shafir can choke me with her thighs any day of the week. Rhea Ripley did it first. She tried to crack Dominic like a walnut. Remember that back in the day when she was first going after Dom every week? She wrapped her thighs around him in the corner and squeezed. And everybody posted the meme online. It should have been me. I saw all the Dolph Ziggler memes. It should have been me. It should have been me. Uffman says, are you doubting El Dandy? I would never do such a thing. Alex says, Brother Solo, will you be giving an in-depth review of SmackDown on your Sunday podcast? Or more of a brief review? I will review what needs to be reviewed. And since it's only a two-hour show and there usually isn't a whole lot going on SmackDown, it probably will be a full-blown review. That'll be on the podcast on Sunday because I will not be here on Friday. I will be at the House of Glory show. George, Salty Solo is fun to watch. It's called Honest Solo. You don't want to have too much salt in your diet, though. It's not good for you. Bobby Means, if I'm Jamie Hayter, I'm taking a page out of the Monet playbook and I'm going to WWE or NXT because this creative is a mess. HBK knows what to do with her. Fuck that. Send her to Raw or SmackDown. TK Banks, I bet Tony Khan doesn't even know that all of his current champions are heels. AEW is really making it hard to watch its weekly television. I may just watch the pay-per-view. We are currently at 388 likes, so we are just under our goal. I'm sorry to say. But I do want to just make mention, as I said before, of where I will be on Friday. There will be no SmackDown review, but I will be at the NYC Arena for House of Glory, and you still have time to buy in on the live stream on Triller TV. First time ever, TNA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Nemeth takes on El Hijo del Vikingo and Masato Tanaka, one-on-one with Mike Santana for the HOG World Championship. And you'll get your SmackDown review on the podcast on Sunday. That'll be episode 884. So now we have shot up to 409. It's funny how that works. All right, time to be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
Here we go. This will be the final one of the week. So we got to make it a good one, man. We have got to make this a good Be the Booker. Let us hope. Todd says, shout out to Todd, by the way, channel member for 22 months. Your Q&A thumbnail looks like you want to fight us. I would never want to fight you guys. I need you on my side. And Grant, channel member for 9 months. Happy belated birthday, Solo, with it being well after midnight. Today is my birthday. Thoughts on the Penguins series so far, if you have seen it? Well, first of all, happy birthday to you. I hope it's a great one. I have not seen the Penguin yet because my understanding is that to really be able to watch the Penguin series, you have to watch The Batman, the Robert Pattinson film that I still haven't seen. So I kind of feel like I need to watch The Batman first before I watch the Penguin. But I did hear that I think the latest episode or one of the latest episodes apparently is rated like 9.5 or something on IMDb. Apparently it's very well received, so it may finally force me to get off my ass and watch The Batman. I'll get back to those in a second. Let's do this first. Demolition, my favorite tag team. Three-time tag team champions, Hall of Fame in my heart, Axe and Smash, Demolition. Legends that are still with us to this day. It was such a thrill for me when I had the chance to interview Demolition at the convention. What convention was it? It was in Orlando. It was in Orlando in 2017. That was a thrill. You can find that on the channel, by the way. My interview with Demolition. Demolition is going to be taking on Imperium. Giovanni Vinci just wrestled Sheamus in that speed tournament on Twitter. That's what they have him doing, losing 3-minute matches on Twitter. Giovanni Vinci and Ludwig Kaiser. We've got Melina. Melina Perez doing the splits for us here to kick off Women's Be the Booker. And let's do a quick trigger here. We got Io Sky. What do you think about this match? Io Sky against Melina. Two for two. Can we go for a hat trick? Here we go. Main event time. We got Psycho Sid, former WWF champion. There it is, the winged eagle. Psycho Sid in the main event. Of course, where else would he be? He was a main eventer everywhere he went. He was a main eventer in the NWA. He was a main eventer in the WWF. He was a main eventer in Memphis. He was a main eventer in ECW. He was a main eventer in WCW. Just look at it. I mean, this is, if you were to build a pro wrestler from scratch, he would look like Sid. Whoops. Sid was the man. Ain't nobody looking like Sid. And he will be wrestling who? Psycho Sid against another former WWE champion in Big E. You know, Big E is a powerful man, and it would have been something to see him picking up Sid and throwing Sid around. Sid and Big E. This is a match for you. I like it. Clean sweep, baby. I needed that after tonight. We don't get to hear the jingle that often, but we got ourselves a clean sweep. That's right. Roderick says meat madness. You got some meat madness there. Oh, man. Retro KOH says, don't lose hope for the Mets. Think back to the 04 Red Sox. They are not out yet. No, they're not out yet, but they played like shit tonight. I can't fucking stand it when teams leave people on base. It just drives me nuts. When you have opportunities and you blow those opportunities, you deserve to lose. Justin says, is Darby doing the Sting 96 storyline? You mean he's going to be out for 18 months? I hope not. When am I booking the Outrunners in Hog? I don't know. We're going to have to try to make that happen. We're having a lot of conversations with different people. I may have to add the Outrunners to the list. Make an outreach to the Outrunners. Thank you guys for all of the support tonight. The audio will be going up either later tonight or tomorrow morning. But again, no SmackDown review here on Friday. It'll be on the podcast on Sunday. The next time I'll be live with you will be Monday night. And we'll be talking about Raw, which will be back live after a tape show this week. That was not great. We'll have a live Raw Monday night. And I guess it'll be a normal week next week. We'll have Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. So we'll be back to normal then. Also, check out the TNT episode I did over with JD last night, over 3 hours. A lot of good discussion there as well. We do that every Tuesday night. And thank you for the support there as well. I'm going to get out of here. Be well. Stay safe. Don't forget, one last reminder here. Don't forget here, if I can fucking find the, there we go. Members only Q&A part one. If you're a channel member, you have access to it right now. You can leave here and go check it out. It's over an hour long. It's 69 minutes. So, yeah, if you want to 69 me, there you go. Part one is up now. Part two coming next week, only if you're a channel member. And I appreciate your patronage very much. Be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great night. And I will see you back here very soon for more Sound Off on YouTube. Take care, guys.